This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Rick Benatar.
Susan Montford.
Don Murphy.
Don, we know you really championed Michael in doing this movie. Can you talk about discovering and nurturing an artist like that, and why don't more producers do that, find these voices that can bring something to film?
Yes, well, it was all three of us. All three of us who championed him. What happened was, it's a kind of a long story, but what happened was Michael had gone to USC with me, graduate school. He was 2 years ahead of me. I went into producing, and a lot of people my year, like Bryan Singer or Gary Fleeter or Steve Summers, ended up going into film too. 2 years ahead of us, Michael and Jay Roach were like the two guys that like walked on water. Michael and Jay, you know, like 8 years later, Jay wound up getting a Austin Powers movies. Michael stayed in there doing these indie films. We were friends with Michael. Michael came to the three of us and said, our company's name is Angry Films. And he came to us and said, I've written this script about the angriest man in the world. You guys will love it. So we all read the script on one weekend, and we all loved the script. And then we all looked at each other, and I said, you know, dollars to donuts, he's going to want to direct it. Which, like, we know he can direct it, but this is not going to be a $3 million film. This is going to be like a $37 million film. And, you know, you got to convince people that you can direct it. So he comes in the next Monday. We're all sitting there. Sure enough, he must have directed. We're like, great. And then, you know, which makes him the biggest genius we've ever come across, he turns around and puts in a DVD into the DVD player. And it's 17 minutes of the film, stick figured, you know, so it's all in your press kit or it's online or whatever.
He showed us on his iPod.
But it's 17 amazing. Minutes of the film, yeah. Stick figured animation, all the action sequences, et cetera, et cetera. So that didn't make it a no-brainer, but it gave us a tool. So when people said, well, how do we like the script, but how do we know he can do it? It was like, oh, well, it's a DVD.
So is the answer then that you have to go back with the guy and know all of their development to be able to...
No. Well, your actual question was, why don't more people develop talent? And the answer is, I don't even know that we did. We just knew the guy, and we knew he could do it, and we liked his script, and so we fought for him.
Yeah, it's a bunch of things that have to fall into place. Like with Michael, he wrote a great script, number one, and we love that. And then he, you know, he's got a background as a storyboard artist, okay, and he did these animatics, and we thought that was great. So you never know. I guess the answer is, you never know if the person you're going to nurture is ever going to be a success. You know what I mean? So producers probably don't go out nurturing talent because it's a crapshoot. Like, why go there if I know that this guy could do this?
Well, the thing is, though, the script was so brilliantly written that, you know, we were pretty sure that he would be amazing. You know, because someone with that amount of talent as a writer and then that amount of talent as a storyboard artist doing the animatics and visualizing it, you know, it's like, it's not that much of a crapshoot.
What in particular about the film or the script that made you guys say, yeah, we're going to back this?
We just loved it. We wanted to see it as a movie. You know, I mean, for us, if we come across material that speaks to us and we want to see it as a movie, that's a drive for us.
It was good. It was very entertaining, more so than realism. You saw it more as an entertaining piece and kept you going.
Well, the humour just cracked us up. It was there in the script, all the humour. I mean, what you're seeing on the screen is not that different from the script. Because we didn't develop the script. We took the script in. And we sold it to New Line. The only notes were to make some changes for Paul Giamatti when he came on. And they weren't so much changes in it as an extension of his character. So what was in the script is what you're seeing.
The film is for a very specific audience, those of us who might be as obsessed as Michael about the same sorts of movies. Should it reach a more limited audience than we hope, would there be any problem for Michael continuing a career in these sort of films? I mean, what would happen, worst case scenario?
It's a bifurcated question. I don't think there'd be any... If the film, God forbid, bombs... I still think Michael's made a great film, and it's being well reviewed and well received, and I think Michael would work again. You said, would it be difficult for Michael to continue in these sort of films? Michael's written a possible sequel, which is even more out there than this. If this somehow bombs, then that would be difficult, sure. But Michael's career, I think, is established because he's directed a really cool movie and, you know, done well with it. It's just I'm not sure someone would say, hey, can you do that, but even more crazy, you know.
And for the budget, it's really, really well done, you know, because, I mean, a lot of the time you spend a lot more money on a film like that, so.
It's because we kept it down to the budget that we did that I don't think anyone at the studio even paid much attention to what we were doing.
What was the budget on this?
37. All in, everything.
I know that. I was just curious. You have a... you acknowledge a lot of the online people. I'm trying to word this correctly. Do you think that it can possibly... How can I put this? When someone writes about a film, say Jeffrey Wells, I'll just throw this out there, and then you write a lot of responses, do you think that... Do you ever feel that, as the producer, it can be sometimes...
I think... I know totally where you're going. Am I too out there sometimes in my responses? I think, having set up a message board on Transformers, and having lived for a year and a half with everything from Don Murphy's great to Don Murphy's raping my childhood, and everything in between, and I've had people that promised me online that they weren't going to see Transformers because I told them they were jerk-offs or something. And I don't think that affected Transformers at all. So at the end of the day, I think what happens to people, I think people are surprised because I go on by my own name instead of Jerkwad 24 or something. and I think people are surprised that I actually me. But for the most part, well, I think people kind of, I mean, the weirdest part of this, I think, is you're going to say, where is he going with this? But if you go watch those To Catch a Predator show, I'm not sure those people are actually, dangerous pedophiles. I think these are people who are sitting there on their computers going to, a weird, bad place and, imagining themselves, doing strange things, right? I think that's what happens to a lot of people on the internet is, oh, fuck Don Murphy, I'm going to kick his ass or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I come on going, hey, why don't I kick your ass? So the answer is, I think... no one takes the internet, I think, that seriously. I hope not, anyway.
Well, what happens then when your own director starts posting stuff on his blog, like Michael Bay did over the summer after the movie opened?
Well, Michael got really angry at the other producer, Tom, because Tom had done a whole bunch of press promoting himself, and I think I got a couple slams in there, but it was irrelevant to the process. Michael and I are fine.
And you guys, I'll just throw it out there, are involved with a whole bunch of projects. You guys are busy people, so could you talk about things that you're currently, and I know you've made a film, mm-hmm. Could you talk about future things that are going on?
You want to go first?
Yeah, talk about Faces of Death first.
So, Faces of Death, which, a lot of people remember as these 80s sort of films that you weren't supposed to watch. Mm-hmm. We've got a story, we've got a director, we've got a writer, J.T. Petty. A couple of indie films. He's coming in and he wrote a script. We're sort of taking a look at the in the world of Saw and Hostel. Who are the people that actually go watch these movies? Mm-hmm. And so we've kind of tied that in with Faces of Death. We have a narrative story which the originals never had, and we also nod for the fans or the kid fans. I'll use that real loosely for guys like me who watched it as a kid who snuck away to go watch these things. We have a few nods to those original films. So we're putting that together.
But it's interesting because it's a horror film that asks, in today's society, when you can just go online and see Al-Qaeda beheadings, what's horrifying anymore? Mm-hmm. And why do people, well, I guess they didn't see Hostel 2, but why do people like Hostel, or did they like Hostel for a while there, and Captivity and these kind of torture porn things? We're kind of doing the opposite of that. What kind of person obsessively goes on the internet and watches killings?
And what is that fascination?
And what is that fascination we all have with stopping in a traffic accident? So it's kind of cool.
Okay. And my project is a very, very low-budget film, which I just directed with Kim Basinger, which I also wrote. And it's a survival movie about an ordinary woman who kind of loses her temper and leaves a nasty note on the wrong car. And it then comes back to haunt her when she has to fight for her life against four thugs. And she's got a toolbox and they've got a gun and a flashlight. And if she doesn't kill them all, she's not going home to her little children. So it's quite a violent film because it's very hyper-real. And Kim's amazing in it.
And what's the name of it?
Yeah. While She Was Out.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it's taken an everyday situation when we've all done it, flipped somebody off, left a nasty note, and just showing how a situation like that can spiral out of control.
It also sounds like a great thriller premise where it's her, these four guys, these things available to her. I mean, how do you milk everything you possibly can out of that situation?
Well, I have her using all the tools in the toolbox.
When will that be released?
Well, I'm still editing it just now. So.
It's executive produced by Guillermo del Toro, Kim Basinger, Lucas Haas, and we're finishing it up. And then, you know, it was a kind of a nice situation. We were able to get a financing situation that she can go make her movie, final cut, everything. So when it's done, we'll find a distributor, and not before, because we don't really want anyone's opinion.
But with that cast and a very sellable premise, that's not going to stay a small indie film for long, is it?
It actually looks like, the way she shot it, actually looks like a $40 million movie, so it's pretty cool, it's pretty fun. And then there's any number of projects that we're trying to put together pre-strike, you know, because everybody's racing to get films done before June, so, you know, our personal favorite is one that Susan brought to the company. You probably know Grant Morrison, the comic book writer. Yeah. He also wrote the screenplay. It's called We Three. And it's the most insane mashup you've ever heard. It's The Incredible Journey meets Terminator. And there's three animals.
And Watership Down.
And Watership Down. There's three animals, a dog, a cat, and a rabbit, who have been turned into, like, Terminator cyborgs by the government. And they get loose, and they just want to go back home. And the government is, like, doing everything possible to stop them, but they're heavily on killing animals.
And it's very beautiful as well. I mean, it's a real tear-jerker, if you can imagine.
So we're this close to having a director sign on to that, which hopefully we'll make, and all kinds of other things. Fincher still wants to do Torso, and the script came in really great. We just got to cast it and see if there's time before the strike and stuff.
What are the thoughts at this point on Transformers 2?
The facts are that everyone's saying there will be one, and lots of ideas are being pitched around, and... I suspect there will be one, but again, the strike thing kind of confuses everybody, you know, it's like, well, when would we have to start? There's no script, you know, and how would we be done by end of June? But, there will be a sequel.
Well, I don't think even Michael didn't want to rush into a sequel, so, I mean...
Yeah, he's still talking about Prince of Persia or something, yeah. So, yeah, we'll see.
But, I mean, if the strike happens, would you still be able to continue development through that, or does that go on hold too?
Well, the strike. What we're all expecting, and by us I mean the three of us and pretty much everyone in Hollywood, is that the writers' deal, who's up in October, will just magically elect to push to June, which is when SAG is up, and so then they'll all go on strike together, and so yeah, there's no writers, you can't do any development.
So I was going to ask a question though, that's not about that. A lot of people thought that the comic book movies were going to be this short little fad that, you know, it started a number of years ago, X-Men, Spider-Man, and it's been getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Do you see it slowing down, like that kind of, those kind of movies? Or, you know, what do you think, why do you think they're so popular still?
I think there's just so much material in comic books. Like, I can't see it slowing down. I mean, there's just so much great material to take and turn into a movie.
Well, plus CG has gotten so good that you can pretty much, things that you couldn't even dream of when X-Men 1 came out, you can now do, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, we like to do things that you've never seen before. Like, if we could pull off the killer robot animals, that's, you've never seen before. Shoot 'em up, you've never seen before. Michael did a great job on Transformers, so did the actors, but the star of Transformers was the ILM guys, who made those things look like, you know, the trucks and the transformations and the 10,000 moving pieces with Optimus Prime work. You know, you hadn't seen it before. I really believe that's why it did so well. So I think, you know, a lot of the superhero movies and things that are coming out, comic book movies that are coming out, are all, again, things that people haven't seen before. You know, and, you know, this is an interesting summer because the threequels have all done well. But I think it's been by upping the ante. I mean, having just seen the Bourne Ultimatum, it was probably more tense than the Bourne Supremacy, which I couldn't imagine it being more tense, you know, so.
Susan, are you still involved with John Carter of Mars?
No.
No.
The deal never, we were all trying to do that. The deal never closed. The Burroughs estate has kind of weird.
Well, it's at Pixar now, so I didn't know if they
didn't work out. Sometimes they don't work out.
No, I know.
I was curious if you had an idea for a running time in your film.
And while she was out? Mm-hmm. It's going to be like a tight 90.
So it's going to be similar to this?
Yeah.
And it's almost real time.
Right? The host takes place like a quasi-real time. Woman leaves the house, woman drives to the mall, woman gets up to her eyes and shit.
It's a hell of a 90 minutes for this woman.
Rob, did you...
Rick.
Rick, I'm sorry. Did you work on...
I'm hung over at time.
Are you involved with Lost Boys 2, or is that Rob and I just wrote down?
I am involved in Lost Boys 2, but I was involved with Lost Boys 2. It's now, I don't even know if it's happening, to be honest with you. it's a Warner Brothers situation and
Warner Premiere.
Warner Premiere, and so I'm not really sure what's going on, to be honest.
And To Live and Die in L.A. remake, is that you also?
No.
No.
Wow, what a bad idea.
It's such a good movie.
The whole movie with Billy Friedkin.
I love that.
Wow, what a bad idea.
What is this, IMDb?
Yeah. You know, you
for Rob Benatar?
Robbie, you're the brother, the twin.
Yeah. You do your research, you just put
got
it.
Got it, thing. Got it.
Yeah, Bubba Nosferatu turned out to be real. I didn't think that was real.
Oh, that is real.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Isn't Paul being in it.
I don't know that it's happening, because the guy who championed Shoot 'Em Up, Jeff Katz, has left New Line and gone to Fox. He was the one championing Bubba Nosferatu. Yeah. Paul definitely wants to do it. We find that amusing, too.
Right. That's great.
I was going to ask you about your experience at a Comic-Con this year, and just what did you think of it, you know, the reaction in the crowd, and also, do you think that Comic-Con has gotten almost too big for San Diego, and where also could it go? The movie played really well. As people that have been going, certainly myself, since 1990, when it was Comic-Con, it's a little bit of a surprise, certainly in the last 3 years, to see it turn into not Comic-Con anymore. There's no comics anymore. It's just Movie-Con. It has gotten too big for San Diego. I wouldn't know where it would go. I know that they've signed an extension till 2012, so it doesn't seem like it's going anywhere. It was a great place to premiere our film, and a lot of our comic book movies would be a great place to premiere. At the same time, just going for fun anymore doesn't seem like you can.
Yeah, it's not fun anymore. And also, Clive came down for the panel. And the panel was at the same hall that they did 300 last year. And the crowd went, not as wild as 300, but definitely
pretty
standing
wild.
Up. It was pretty wild. They were pretty into it. So it's a good gauge. 5,000 people, 5,000 kids getting up and screaming for your movie is a pretty good gauge. I mean, that's our target audience. So for them to get up and cheer like that made us feel pretty good.
I was also going to go a little further. I know that they've restricted now, you know, the showing of R-rated material at Con. And for me, I just think that it's become Disney-ized, you know what I mean? And it's unacceptable.
Yeah,
curious.
Michael was intending to show the Making Love sequence, and then they pulled it. So.
Yeah.
Right, so do you think that, you know, how do you feel about them basically, you know, going with, or, you know, hindering artistic freedom, or, you know, trying to show PG stuff?
Don't like it, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, it's, no, I mean, it's not like we're up all night going, fuck Comic-Con, I mean, you know, I mean, it was this great place to go when it was like a third the size and geek out. And now that it's become the mecca for geeks, it's almost not sure what it is. It's still comics, but it's movies, but it's toys, but it's animation, but it's manga. You know, it's not sure what it is. And you know, maybe in the next couple of years the identity will get more streamlined and it'll know what it is.
That's all we have time for. Thank you.
Quickly, if you could go ahead on Shoot 'Em Up 2, would you really do it pre-strike or...
You know what, that's a complete function of Clive, his schedule. This movie waited for him to do Inside Man and Children of Men before we went. And I don't know his schedule. So he may have his... You know, everyone's like talking about Jim Carrey has two slots, and Clive may be full till June. I don't even know. But it would be all about Clive.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cool.
Thank you.